Good morning and welcome to HealthWorks. This is Carol Kinnear, Way Memorial Community Health Manager. Thank you for listening today. And for those of you that may not know, November is COP Awareness Month. And I have two guests here. I have Dr. Sean McVeigh. Good morning, Dr. McVeigh.
Good morning.
And Dr. McVeigh is our pulmonologist here at the Physician Specialty Clinic at Way Memorial Hospital. He's also our Chief Medical Staff Officer. And then my second guest is Tina Cobb. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning.
And Tina is a nurse practitioner here at the pulmonary office at Way Memorial Hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
So welcome. Thank you both for joining me today on the show. So like I said, November is COPD Awareness Month, and we know that's an acronym for something. So Dr. McVeigh, can you share with our audience what is COPD?
So COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And the obstructive part of that is things like emphysema, chronic bronchitis, and asthma. The chronic component to that, an acronym, means that it's persistent. The symptoms may have good days and bad days, but overall the condition is with a person for the rest of their life, as opposed to just a acute cold or an acute bronchitis, where you may have similar symptoms to COPD, but those symptoms are going to be short-lived and not permanent.
Right.
And the symptoms that we typically associate with somebody with COPD are a cough that doesn't have to be productive, but if it is, it tends to have a congestive wet component to it, the kind of that mucusy cough, chest cough. The mucus that comes up can be clear, but it's typically has a color to it, a tannish, whitish, or even a brownish consistency. And that's just an indication of chronic inflammation within the airways. Patients are also going to have an increase in mucus production. You know, we make mucus all the time. It's what protects our lungs from getting sick. But mucus in patients with COPD tends to be excessive, so they tend to feel their mucus. You know, we normally will swallow our mucus unconsciously, unaware that it's there. Patients with COPD have to expectorate the mucus because it's too much for their body to handle. And then shortness of breath. With activities that hadn't typically caused shortness of breath in the past. And we're all gonna feel short of breath running up a flight of stairs, but if you're putting your shoes on in the morning or trying to, you know, get dressed or carry the groceries from the car into the house and you're short of breath, that may be a sign that things are not completely working normally with the lungs.
Right. And again, like you said, this is a chronic condition. So this is something that individuals live with once they're diagnosed for the rest of their life, which is a little different because, you know, you had mentioned the symptom shortness of breath doing certain things. There are other medical conditions that could be shortness of breath. And if someone experiences that overall, they should probably go to the emergency room or talk to their doctor, right?
Right. Especially any shortness of breath that's associated with chest pain or lightheadedness. That's new.
Mm-hmm.
Especially this time of year, if you're out shuffling in the driveway, you get short of breath with chest pain, that's a time to go to the emergency room just
right.
to make sure it's not your heart.
Exactly.
Because a lot of the things that cause COPD
mm-hmm.
Also cause cardiovascular disease, so we see an awful lot of overlap in that. And while we're on that
yes.
subject, you know, as I always point out, 90% of COPD in America is related to smoking. There's no if, ands, or buts about it. It's clear cut. One out of every two smokers will get COPD in their lifetime. And that's a fact.
Right. And that is a statistic that I think individuals really need to hear, especially young people, right? Because
right.
most individuals who start to smoke are not 50 years old, correct?
Correct.
That's
and,
when they
and
may
I would
develop
say
it.
That they're the most at risk. And the lungs are a very resilient organ, but you only get two of them. And what I mean by that is there's no regeneration of lung tissue. So what you get is what you have for the rest of your life. There's a lot of reserve to that lung tissue to account for injuries or illness or things like that. But if you're persistently damaging your lungs, you're tapping into all of that reserve. that reserve is there for your benefit when you're 60, 70, 80 years old, because the lungs are going to age. And typically the lungs start aging at around 30, 35 years old. So the thing we hear all the time in the office is, well, how can I have COPD? I quit smoking in my 30s and I'm 60. Well, the unfortunate thing is all the damage was done while you were smoking as a teenager into your early 20s, but you didn't have any of the symptoms because you had so much redundancy to your lungs that you weren't going to demonstrate those symptoms. But as you get older, your lung age catches up with you, and you'll start to have lungs that are functionally 90, you know, plus years old when you're in your 60s. And when you're in your 60s and want to still be active, that's when you're going to really notice those limitations.
Right. So basically, don't start smoking ever.
Right.
And when we say smoke, we mean any tobacco products like vaping.
Right.
You know, smoking cigarettes, cigars, pipe, anything like that.
There's no healthy alternative to cigarette smoking. You know,
right.
Vaping is not that.
Right.
And we clearly don't advocate the use of vaping.
Right. And there are plenty of programs if anyone's listening and wants to stop smoking. You know, you could just reach out to our community health office and we will get you connected with a program or give you some information, because that's so important.
And we had just attended, so you mentioned that November is COPD Awareness Month, but November 16th is International COPD Day. And every year we go down to a conference in Philadelphia that celebrates that awareness. And we also reveal our new published guidelines for the upcoming year on how to best manage this disease using evidence-based medicine. And every year it's the same thing that you walk away with. The two biggest ways we can impact management of COPD is, one, if you're smoking, to encourage and help with quitting, and the second is something we call pulmonary rehabilitation. So even though there's a plethora of different medications and combination of medications that are out there, all the medicines continue to show is they'll help with symptoms and help reduce some of those symptoms, but the only true impact we can have on disease management and improving quality of life is tobacco cessation and pulmonary rehab. That's what it was in the early 2000s, and that's what it's going to be in 2023.
And again, they continue to do this research, and it continues to show the same thing.
Right.
You know, the smoking cessation and then the pulmonary rehab. And that's where I'm coming to you, Tina. We can't, you know, we invited you on the show. We need to have your input, too. You know, Way Memorial, we have a pulmonary rehab program here, correct?
We actually do. One of the only ones in the area. And people really, it helps with the anxiety of the COPD. They really understand how to take their inhalers. It improves their activity tolerance and the quality of their life beyond what any inhaler we can give. And what's wonderful is it's not forever. It's a few weeks, and they're taught the skills, and they take the skills home with them. And Valerie does an absolutely wonderful job. People are always come back to me surprised at how much they've gotten out of the program. The biggest regret I hear from them has to usually do with, I wish I'd have done it sooner.
Right.
And then talking about exacerbations, getting somebody in, we used to wait too long to get them into pulmonary rehab. Now, if you've been in the hospital, we want to have that conversation and get you moving rather quickly.
Right. And so, you know, they have the overall, you know, pulmonary rehab program, but they also have a maintenance program, right,
mm-hmm.
for individuals that once you go through that and you want to maintain that regular activity, that regular learning, correct?
We actually do, and we have quite a few people that really enjoy that,
mm-hmm.
And they make friends there, even the ones who didn't know they wanted friends. And they're just constantly impressed with how much they've improved.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
went from just walking in the door was all they could do to now they're riding a bike for a half an hour or whatever. And the biggest thing is they feel safe.
Right.
At home, when you're trying to push it a little bit, no, you
mm-hmm.
get short of breath, it's scary. But when you have the support staff there with you, you know how far you can safely exert. And so many people just love that.
Right, I know. I've stopped up there once in a while and, you know, just to kind of say hi and stuff, and the individuals that are there are just smiling because they really, it makes their, again, their quality of life better, which it really comes down to.
And I always tell patients it's not just about walking on a treadmill. We offer nutritional support. We have a nutritionist that also works in there. And we also have social services support. We have a social worker and caseworker that's there to see if there's any needs or things that could be helpful in the house. Things as simple as, you know, am I using my inhaler right? And do I need, you know, some supplemental devices to help me use my inhaler better? Or are there programs out there that can make the cost of my medicines more affordable? Transportation,
right.
You know, things like that, very helpful, you know. So it's all encompassing. And, you know, we're limited, unfortunately, by time in the office. So these are a lot of topics that we can't touch upon. So we see the pulmonary rehab as an extension of the services that we offer here in the office, and it's an invaluable resource. I know we had a slight hiccup during COVID where we could only have so many participants at a time in there, but we're back to full schedule, full operation. We do make exceptions to people that have find it difficult to wear their mask. There's some workarounds that we can offer them as well, so, you know, they're not excluded from the program either.
Right, which is really great. And I know with nutrition, I mean, when I used to do nutrition counseling, you know, you had individuals that, you know, just needed to understand what healthy eating means. You know, some of them may need to lose a little bit of weight. Some people may need to gain some weight when they have COPD. So you have a big, you know, difference among each patient, but nutrition is so important.
45% of COPD patients meet the criteria for malnourished.
Right. Because it's just amazing how many calories someone burns to try and breathe and to breathe normally.
Breathing is normally a zero effort
endeavor.
It's built into our metabolism. So when you're breathing excessively, coughing, clearing mucus, fighting chronic inflammation, it's extremely taxing on the body. And you have to support that nutritionally. The problem is if you reach for carbohydrates, and I don't want to get too much in this, but you know, some people, what they think they're doing best for themselves is actually a negative. You know, processing carbohydrates in someone who has emphysema is actually taxes the lung more and can actually cause them to lose weight, where, you know, we think eating pasta and ice cream is a automatic weight gainer. In this situation, it actually can be you know, problematic for folks. So that's why, you know, having nutritionists on board is very important, because it's a lot of the things are counter to what you think work best.
Right. So, you know, just we only have like 2 minutes left. There's some tips out there to keep people healthy during the winter months for COPD. Any recommendations? Like, it's extremely cold out today. What would you recommend them do?
Well, as far as that goes, I'd recommend they wear a mask. But as far as prevention, one of the things, I don't know if we already discussed it, is vaccines.
Yes.
Any vaccine, even if it's not for a respiratory illness, can cause an exacerbation in your COPD symptoms. So get up to date on all your vaccinations, flu, pneumonia, pertussis, even the shingles vaccine. They're finding that it does help with to prevent exacerbations.
Right. So, and that's some new guidelines, right?
There's some things that we do that actually stresses the immune system that can bring out a shingles flare-up. And so, you know, we often have to use steroids as a measure to treat the inflammation, and steroids can trigger, you know, shingles. And so that's one of the other big reasons why we want and need to have our patients at risk properly vaccinated for the shingles vaccine.
Right.
And it goes back to the whole thing, you know, good hand washing. It's the holiday season. If you have school-age children that are coming over to visit, you know, if they have sniffles and cough, really have to hand wash, barrier, all the things that we talk about. Because, you know, those viruses, you know, the two-thirds of what puts a COPD patient in the hospital is a viral infection. So 2 out of every 3 admissions, it's from a virus.
Right.
And a virus that was contact from typically a close family member.
Right.
So it's not the grocery store. It's not the, you know, the the person that you met down the street. It's usually close family members and it's school-age children in particular.
Right.
So we're not saying don't visit at the holidays, but this is the peak season. So mm-hmm. hand washing, barriers, you know, if child's coughing, wear a mask. You know, it's all just prevention.
Right. Right, because, you know, we want to see them as follow-ups to keep them healthy, right? Not necessarily as an inpatient here at Wayne Memorial. So, Dr. McVeigh and Tina, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I think the information that we shared is going to be really helpful for our listeners today.
And again, reach out for those tobacco quit health lines. I know we have programs here at the hospital. There's programs with your health insurance carrier, mm-hmm. programs with community groups and centers. There's help out there to get you smoke free.
Great. Thank you so much. Again, this is Carol Knier wishing you a great day, and thank you for listening.